What's the deal with this?
Deal? What are you saying?
Deal.
Deal?
I don't see what the big deal is, you know? It's not that great.
Good deal. You won't regret it.
What's the deal, son? What do you have going?
All right, look, here's the deal.
What do you say we make this deal?
Co-living refers to housing complexes that apply the sharing economy model to living space. Most spaces offer residents a furnished private or semi-private bedroom with shared communal spaces like kitchens, common areas, and bathrooms in an effort to solve some of the common problems of modern urban living. Today on the show, I'm speaking with Chris Bledsoe, co-founder of Ollie. Ollie is an all-inclusive co-living platform providing fully furnished shared micro-studios, shared suites with hotel-style services, extraordinary amenities, and community. I'm your host, Ryan Cox, managing partner at Founders Grove Capital, a multifamily value-add investment firm. The Real Estate Innovators is a podcast that explores innovation in commercial real estate. Celebrate the companies and innovators who are changing the business of commercial real estate and are inspiring the future of how we work, live, and play. I asked Chris about his background and what led him to start Ollie.
The most important part of my background is that I was a big brother, and I was a big brother to Andrew, our co-founder, Ollie's co-founder, and he was moving to New York City, and like a lot of young people, he was 23 years old at the time, a lot of young people moving to a city like New York, trying to figure out how to make ends meet, it's not the easiest thing to navigate. And the housing market then, like now, and this was back in 2006, then like now is a bit of a gauntlet. So we needed to figure out, how in a market where the opening price point product, a studio, commanded about $2,500 a month, and a landlord required 40 times your rent in order to qualify in terms of your income verification, we need to figure out how someone making less than $100,000 a year could actually gain entree into the housing market. So a massive underground housing market has emerged, given those dynamics. And that underground housing market, one of the most dominant places where that housing market transacts, is on Craigslist. Craigslist has a section on the website called Rooms and Shares. And this is, we would soon find out, where you go if you're 23 years old, regardless of being gainfully employed, if you're not earning that $100,000 a year threshold, where you go to gain entree to the housing market. So my brother decided that he would take a one-bedroom apartment and ask me to be a guarantor for him, which I agreed to, but he showed me that he had a plan, and that the plan was he was going to turn his living room space by virtue of a pressure wall into two additional bedrooms. So he's essentially going to take a one bedroom apartment, one bathroom, turn it into a three bedroom, one bathroom, zero living room. And he did that. What we didn't expect was that over the course of the next 2 days after posting his listings onto Craigslist, that he would receive 90 responses. And that people would say, I'll take it sight unseen. I'll pay you more than you're even asking. And there was a real desperation in their voices to try to figure out, how they could just convince my brother Andrew that he should, sublet his spare bedroom to them. And that was the aha moment for us. I like to say that there was an aha moment, which is when he took the listing down simply because he didn't want to sift through 90 different potential roommates to figure out who he wanted to share the space with. And he put it back up at a higher price point. And he had to do that a few more times. And when all was said and done, he ended up living entirely for free in the most expensive housing market in the country at the time, New York City. So we knew that there had to be a better way. And we've approached the housing market accordingly ever since. We have backgrounds originally starting out in finance. So my brother, interestingly enough, was working at Bear Stearns, and I was at Lehman Brothers. So two of the casualties, if not causes, of the credit crisis back in 2008. But that experience was an eye-opening one for us as entrepreneurs, and also has helped us better understand why innovation has been so slow to come into the market for housing in a world where you have virtually every other sector, it seems disrupting by the day.
Nearly two-thirds of renters nationwide say they can't afford to buy a home, and saving for that down payment isn't going to get easier anytime soon. I asked Chris about the challenges facing affordable housing.
The affordability crisis, I like to say, is a man-made one. And as awful as it is, it also has a man-made solution. There's an interplay here with policy, of course, as well. But even before delving into kind of capital A affordable housing, I think the root of our affordable housing crisis really just stems from a failure to understand the consumer. And the opportunity, when I was in finance, I was covering consumer product companies, and you take a consumer product category. I was particularly closely following food companies. So take something like cereal, and the amount of choice that the cereal manufacturers have put into the market is astounding, right? You've got one walk down the cereal aisle can be overwhelming. In fact, you've got cereals of every different shape and flavor profile and format. You can have cereal in a cup. You can have it out of a box. You can buy it out of a bag. You can buy it in a bar format. There's just an explosion of choices in a category like cereal. But you take housing, which I look at as a consumer product category, and something that when you think of it as a consumer product category, it's many multiples bigger than something, say like the cereal category. Yet we have far less choice. The product itself has become excessively commoditized. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason we've wanted, to fit our apartment buildings into tidy little boxes and say, okay, this is the unit mix. This is the allocation of studios, and this is the allocation of one bedrooms and the allocation of two bedrooms. And this is what a lobby should look like. And these are what the amenities should look like. There is a reason we've done all that. And that is so that we can securitize the housing product so that it can commoditize it. You can securitize it. And if you can securitize it, in theory, it becomes more readily financeable. So that's why we've done it. It just so happens, though, that the type of investor that's drawn to, say, something like apartment buildings in gateway markets is a rather risk-averse investor. They're not comparing their returns against, venture capital style benchmarks, with high return expectations. They have very low return expectations. And in a big way, their low return expectations, they're comping their returns against government bond yields, if you think about the debt that's used to finance housing. Their low return expectations mean that they also have very low risk expectations. And for them, innovation is not the lifeblood of the housing market the way that innovation is the lifeblood of a consumer product category. Innovation for a risk-averse investor means change. And change is a scary thing. So you've now had multiple decades of essentially financiers saying, backing the same look and feel of an asset profile that they backed the prior year and the prior decade. But all of that is kind of static in nature. All of that is taking place against a backdrop where the consumer is changing in seismic ways. If you think about the average, something as simple as the average age of marriage in 1970 was 22 years old. And today it's 28, 29. And I like to say that's even including Texas in the average. And you take Texas out of the average and you bring the whole country up a couple years in terms of the average age of marriage. And so in these cities, 30, 35, and sometimes never are what consumers are increasingly opting for in terms of marriage. That changes everything about the way that we want to live and how we want to interact. And that's just one of the changes, not to mention technology making us more self-sufficient. So all these other changes have been occurring, yet the asset housing, apartment buildings, look basically like they did in 20, 30, 40 years ago. So the opportunity is to evolve the product, but you can't do that without evolving the thinking of the risk-averse investor first.
I asked Chris about what makes Ollie's business model work.
So density is what makes the model work. And it's not too dissimilar from how co-working has been disrupting the office environment. In the co-working world, we're disrupting by virtue of densifying with desks. So a floor plate that would have housed maybe 200 desks previously, if it can now house, you know, 50% more desks, there's that much more economic juice that can be squeezed out of the asset. At the same time, by housing more desks, the asset does not need to charge as much for each of the desks. So the opportunity then in housing is quite similar. For the consumer who's increasingly thinking of themselves as a household of one and spending more and more of their time outside of the home, I always think of the living room as being a bit of a misnomer. You go to a living room to veg, not to live. You go outside of the home to live. And so for that consumer who's living more of their life outside of the home and doesn't need as much space, the opportunity is to not ask them to pay for space that they don't need. And UCLA did a really interesting study on this where they found that 90% of our time, we're only actually using 40% of our home. That means that other 60% is a lot of waste. And if you look at the great disruptors out there, whether that's, you know, Uber or Airbnb, they're finding ways to turn waste into more productivity or for the consumer for savings. And so that's what we're doing at Ollie. We're densifying buildings. And that, by the way, also has a whole slew of knock-on benefits beyond affordability, including environmental benefits. If you think about these apartment buildings in our gateway cities, they're the number one emitters of carbon dioxide. If you can reduce carbon emissions by densifying assets, if I can double the density of one building, I don't need to build another building. I've just nearly halved the amount of carbon emissions out there. That's a whole nother thing. But the main proposition is that we're able to reduce the price point for the consumer without any need for, you know, any kind of capital A affordable housing mandates, which oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes can be a little bit misguided in the policy and actually have the opposite effect as what is intended and exacerbate supply constraints and therefore push housing prices even higher ultimately. But there is a market solution, and that's what Ollie is pursuing. How you get somebody to live comfortably in a small space is where the artistry comes in and where our design team takes great pride in what they're doing by embedding functionality through transforming furniture or using, you know, design tricks that help, you know, create the look and feel of a space that is, you know, a small space into a much larger space, but without sacrificing functionality. That's the really important thing.
I asked Chris how Ollie differentiates from co-living competition. What makes Ollie unique?
Not every co-living operator is focused on density the way that Ollie is. So some are more focused on taking existing townhomes and turning the spaces into serviced apartments, if you will, and being able to rent those bedrooms that maybe previously rented to a family, rent them out instead to a group of roommates. And well, I think that's fine. The real opportunity is to purpose build much larger scale assets for this need so that you're not displacing housing for families, but you're adding new supply into the housing market to help actually address the needs in the marketplace. By doing it in a purpose-built, large-scale way, right? The average co-living operator has about 20 or 30 beds per location. In the case of Ollie, it's 200 to 300 beds per location, and in our most recent one, it's 422 beds in the Long Island City ad we just delivered late last year. And that scale allows us to improve upon the consumer experience because we can negotiate contracts with vendors, whether that's, you know, really whether that's Wi-Fi or cable or organizing social events or housekeeping services. We can negotiate these contracts in much larger scales. Buying it in bulk allows us to then deliver more value to the consumer and or embed a greater degree of services. So when you move into Ollie, you could show up with your backpack full of clothes, your toothbrush and your laptop, and you're ready to go. Your Wi-Fi is already set up for you. Your whole unit's been furnished, pre-furnished for you. Your bed linens are part of a weekly program. Your towels are part of a weekly program. Your bath amenities are getting topped up weekly. Even your toilet paper is getting restocked weekly. So it's a really easy way to live. And those extra bells and whistles that Ollie provides, which some co-living operators don't, are largely a function of the fact that we could buy in really great quantities. In addition, when you're moving into an Ollie, you're not just joining a building, you're joining a community and a network. Each building has multiple thousands of square feet of play space on their own. But the exciting thing when you're joining Ollie is that you're getting the entire network of play spaces. You have access as a resident in one building to the entire network of play spaces. And as we add more buildings over time, that becomes increasingly valuable.
I asked Chris how Ollie is able to build community into their buildings and how it is different from a traditional multifamily building.
So let's take the most recent location that we opened. This is a 42-story building in Long Island City, situated right atop Queens Plaza, where you have seven different subway lines converging within just a few blocks of the site. The ability to pick that transit-oriented location is a benefit that we get from purpose building from the start. We also are able to embed in the amenity program a beautiful pool, a 10,000 square foot fitness center. We're able to add two different roof decks. And it's not the roof decks in and of itself that are special, although they're pretty awesome views of the Manhattan skyline, I have to say. It's how we activate those spaces and really just make them come alive with community programming. That's what makes it so special. If you've ever done that sort of typical walkthrough of an apartment building in any of these major cities, and it's kind of a Class A apartment building, you've probably been sold on all the beautiful amenity spaces during the leasing walk. But it might have occurred to you, or maybe not, that those leasing spaces, those amenity spaces were virtually empty. There's all this great amenity space that goes totally unutilized or vastly underutilized in these gateway markets. And if you think about that, that's a horrible thing, because that's square footage that is cannibalizing what could have been, you know, 5% more apartments added to the apartment supply if nobody was going to use that space to begin with. Or alternatively, we can activate that space so that people actually use it and shrink the size of the apartments themselves so that we can put more apartments onto the floor plate, housing more people onto the floor plate, but giving those people more reason to be out of the home and engaged in communal activity. If you think about it, it's really kind of a funny thing that we are increasingly urban, which means we're increasingly in closer quarters with one another. We're increasingly digitally connected to one another through social media, yet we are lonelier than at any point in our history. And we're seeing that loneliness epidemic having tragic consequences. I mean, suicide rates have spiked and, you know, all sorts of other tragic consequences. We also know now through studying the elderly population, we know that community is the fountain of youth. Community is allowing us to live longer. That engagement with others is a very healthy thing for us to have, yet we're not getting that right now from our apartments. In fact, we can go years without even knowing our neighbors' names in most Class A luxury apartment buildings in these cities.
My understanding of co-living is that people are living with strangers to save money and maintain a higher standard of living than they might enjoy on their own. I asked Chris about the target demographic for Ollie.
So I'm always careful to say that there's no target market. Ollie doesn't have a target market. It's really for the consumer to decide if co-living is right for them. And different consumers are reaching that conclusion. I do think that there's a reaction to different floor plans, and we're very careful about our floor plans creating a whole spectrum of price and privacy, recognizing that some people want privacy more than others, and some people are better able to pay for privacy than others. That means we have some micro studios in the mix alongside our shared suites, and even within the shared suites, Not every bedroom is created equal. Some bedrooms have their own ensuite bathroom. Some even have their own entrance off of the hallway, getting closer and closer to having that studio-like experience. If you're in that particular, you know, bedroom with its own entrance off of the hallway and its own bathroom, all you're sharing is the kitchen. Different consumer cohorts do react predictably to different degrees of privacy. So a younger consumer who's just out of college, who's used to sharing space, perhaps in a dormitory setting, is a lot more likely to be also price sensitive and willing to give up privacy coming right into the housing market for the first year. So our shared suites tend to grab a consumer who's younger in profile, whereas our micro studios would tend to gravitate more toward other cohorts, including older professionals who have a higher degree of earnings power, as well as, I would say, like recent divorcees. We see long distance commuters looking for a crash pad. And we also see increasingly empty nesters and baby boomers who are rethinking what they want their retirement to look like. They've got a lot of wealth trapped in their suburban home, and their kids are now out, are in college or graduated from college. They're at a point where they're ready to retire, and they're questioning, do I want to keep all of my wealth tied in my home, or should I sell my suburban home, use that to fund travel and different experiences in retirement, and downsize my lifestyle, perhaps live in a more urban location, perhaps closer to where their kids are. So that consumer is also gravitating toward Ollie, but they tend not to gravitate as much to the shared suites as they do to the micro studio unit where there's a little more privacy. Either way, whether you're in a micro studio at Ollie or a shared micro suite, either way, you're just as much a part of the Ollie community as anybody else in the building. So it simply defines where you sleep at night if you're in a micro studio or a shared suite.
I asked Chris how Ollie is curating and managing resident experiences.
So our buildings host a oftentimes live-in community manager. And you can think about a community manager at Ollie similar to how an RA at a dorm functions. So their job is to organize events in the building for the residents. That's at no additional cost to the residents. We build that into the operating expense of the building itself. And then we supplement, at a corporate level, we supplement those in-building experiences with out-of-building experiences. So every Ollie resident gets a membership to Ollie Social, and Ollie Social organizes both in-city experiences. And I always think one of the best parts of living in the city is getting out of it. And so being able to take a trip upstate, whether that's snowshoeing and whiskey tasting, or perhaps it's a kayak trip with a beach cleanup afterwards, or one of my favorites, we did an organic farm tour where we started the day with a yoga session in the middle of the orchard, and we ended with a meal, white tablecloth meal, farm to table, right in the middle of the orchard, which was a really cool experience. So our job at Ollie Informing Community, it's to create events that people actually want to show up for, because if you create an event that people want to show up for, you give more opportunity for the residents to interact. The where our focus is going now, we've created a roommate matching platform. And one of the questions, it's sort of like an online dating profile, if you will, how you fill out a survey, and then our algorithm suggests different matches that you could be compatible with. But one of the questions that we ask in the name of the platform, by the way, is kind of cheeky. It's called Bedvetter. One of the questions that Bedvetter asks is, what are your hobbies and interests? And what I'm excited about is that as we're now collecting this data, instead of being totally responsible for curating all of the community activity that occurs in the building, we now have the insights that we need to connect people within the building to one another and be more of a suggestive tool for different events that might align with the interests that they've recorded in the roommate matching tool. So for instance, I'm a scuba diver. I love scuba diving. If there were other scuba divers in the building, I would love to know that. And you could organize day trips, and I wouldn't need Ollie to organize that for me. But I would like to know who else I could connect with in the building to share that passion with. And I do think for me, in terms of social impact that OLLI has going forward, it's really not just about housing affordability, and it's not even just about the loneliness epidemic, but it's really about starting to recluster society. We've organized ourselves based off of income levels. And you see this with gentrification, right? You have whole neighborhoods or gated communities that are that get created, but the commonality of like who your neighbor is, it's determined pretty much by the fact that you're in the same tax bracket as the person living next door to you. Now, that on its own is not a particularly strong bonding agent, but that's how we've organized as a society. When we can take the tools and insights and know, essentially create a heat map for hobbies and interests, I think that's relevant information that would actually help inform someone's decision to move. Do I want to move onto a floor that has scuba divers, or maybe there's a pet lover floor and I'm allergic to pets, so maybe I don't want to move onto a floor with pets. I really would rather be on the floor with scuba divers. I think we can start reclustering society in ways that are much healthier, you know, interest and passions rather than incomes.
Projections show that roughly two-thirds of the global population will live in cities by 2050. That means cities will need to house more than 6 billion people by that time. I asked Chris about the opportunity for OLLI to grow.
For me, the growth trajectory for the industry, not just for OLLI, for the entire industry is what's super exciting. And I can speak to OLLI's growth trajectory, which is the fact that it took us from 2011 to 2014 just to get our first yes on a building. It took us 4 more years to open our third location. And today, we've got 5 more locations that are in development at different stages of development. And so we're excited about those 5. But those 5 got signed up before we even had built a track record on the first few. So the track record on the first few is proving critically important to the growth trajectory of our business. We've gone now from having those 5 that are signed up to having over 135 in the pipeline that we're now negotiating or evaluating. And the size of these is quite robust. I mean, we're talking about 300 plus beds per location. That 135 was about 35 that we were negotiating or evaluating before we had opened up our largest asset, Long Island City asset, in 2018. So the proof points that have been coming off of those first few assets, we've been able to aggregate those and take them back to that risk-averse investor who didn't want to do anything different. And we've been able to say, look, there are proof points that this housing has a tremendous amount of demand. And by the way, we've been able to de-risk the asset in all sorts of other ways, like showing how the floor plans are readily convertible back to conventional layouts. We're signing leases, not anything wonky, not any kind of like licensing or membership agreements. These are leases. So capital markets can feel good that this is a multifamily product. And that is what, you know, these proof points and the thoughtfulness that we as a team have put into addressing the concerns of the capital markets, that is what's now driving the explosion in the pipeline to that 135 deals that I've mentioned. The really crazy thing is, if you think about those 135 deals, it's about 40,000 beds in total. When we run the demand studies and look at the addressable market here, just the U.S. alone and just the top 30 MSAs in the U.S., you're talking about a need for about 18 million beds. So our 40,000, which by the way would require about $10 billion of total project capitalization to bring to market, represents just not even a sliver of a drop in the bucket of the 18 million beds in just the U.S. alone that will be needed to totally satisfy demand.
Similar to how the Industrial Revolution provided new models for how people work and live, we need new iterations on these concepts to serve the needs of the global population in the 21st century. I asked Chris what the next 5 to 7 years looks like for the co-living space.
Our mission at OLLI is to humanize housing. I know that, you know, in terms of as an owner of the business and in terms of the financials, what I know is that the opportunity is huge. I spend virtually no part of my day other than when I'm meeting with investors thinking about the economics. I don't need to think about the economics because I know I've created a better mousetrap. Financially, we're unlocking a 30% economic arbitrage versus conventional multifamily assets. So I know that the owners of these assets have an incentive to expand the model to more and more locations. That's not what I spend the majority of my day thinking about. What I spend most of my time and my brother, our co-founder, Andrew, what we are and our team are thinking about day in, day out is how do we better humanize the housing experience? And we're thinking about humanization of housing through the lens of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And when you start thinking about it that way, you look at the base of the hierarchy of needs. And at the base of that pyramid, you've got basic needs like water and shelter and safety. And I think about the existing housing market does those things relatively well. It'll keep your roof standing. It'll keep your plumbing working, generally keep the premises secure, at least for those who can afford it. Right. And there's a whole slew of people I mentioned that are priced out in the underground housing market who you don't necessarily take those things for granted. But even if you can afford it, the housing process today is not very humane. It's very cold and transactional. You're sort of, you know, you're asked to sign an 80-page document with a lot of fine print. You're handed a set of keys and you're left to your own devices. Now you got to go figure out your furniture situation. You got to go call the cable company and get your Wi-Fi set up. You got to figure out the rest. And then you don't even, you know your neighbors for, you know, the tenure of your time there. So the opportunity, even if you can't afford the housing, official housing market, is to address the other rungs of the ladder on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which means creating a sense of belonging, which means building esteem, which means even helping the consumer find what better and more productive ways to self-actualize. And that sounds a little bit lofty, but we've broken it down and made it actually very tangible. Our community managers are there to create that sense of belonging. Our interior design team and our architecture team, our interior design team is really creating small, although these are small spaces, they're beautifully designed. They feel very elevated and sophisticated. And so someone can take pride in bringing a friend back to their home. So we're addressing esteem that way, so nobody has to feel like a second-class citizen in their own home. And then the idea of self-actualization is an interesting one. In terms of self-actualization, I don't think we can do that for anybody. Like, they have to do that work for themselves. That's why the word self is in there. But we can look at what the biggest obstacles are to self-actualization, which are typically time and money. I don't have enough time to pursue my passion, or I don't have enough money to pursue my passion. And we can, through the benefit of shrinking the floor plan, our architecture team is helping to return dollars to our residents. And then we're embedding services, time-saving services like housekeeping, or the fact that we've pre-furnished these, or we're changing linens, or we're topping up bath amenities. Those are all chores and errands that would have had to been conducted by our residents on their own that now are being done for them. So time and money is now back in their hands that they can use to self-actualize. And then at the top of the pyramid, this notion of collective actualization, which, you know, we are greater than the sum of our parts. And so that idea, we've really rooted community in four values: inclusiveness, wellness, discovery, and sustainability, on the notion that we are most actualized when we're helping others to be at their best. And that's the basis of community at Ollie, formed around those four values and formed around the idea of helping one another.
Great to connect with Chris Bledsoe of Ollie today. Ollie is all-inclusive co-living, providing efficiently designed studios and shared suites, wrapped in a bundle of hotel-like services and communal living that promises to make life better, more affordable, more convenient, and more fun. And that concludes our show. I'm excited to follow Chris and Ollie's pursuit to transform our current model of urban living. You can find out more about Chris and Ollie in the show notes. Please subscribe to The Real Estate Innovators and write a review wherever you subscribe to podcasts, which helps us grow our audience. Find out more about The Real Estate Innovators at therealestateinnovators.com. Until next time, innovators.